Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the last track session of TechEd Australia 2013. So, has everyone had a good week? Yeah. So, tell me, who's as soon as they get back to work, there's something that they're gonna try out, download, have a go of. Anyone? Yeah. Yeah, come on. It's good, isn't it? Get those ideas going. That's what it's all about. So, I'm a Carol Wapshire MVP with our Forefront Identity Manager. However, this session's not... Normally, I just talk about FIM. Yeah, it's my pet topic. But I wanted to go a lot broader with this session. So, yeah, FIM's in there a little bit, but, you know, identity, it really touches a lot of stuff. And so I really wanted to give this a broader view of identity in this session. So I will say right away, I'm going for breadth, not depth. I'm not going into anything very deeply, so I'm going to be touching on a lot of different things. I'm also going to try and cover quite a lot of ground. So, and I really don't want to go over time because we all got to get to the lock note after this. So I won't be taking questions during the session, but you're more than welcome to ask me questions at the end. I've got some cards down here. I've got my Twitter handle there. So, you know, get in touch or whatever if you want to continue the discussion afterwards. So before I dive into it, I just wanted to very quickly explain what my motivation was in coming up with this session this year. And it's one conversation. One conversation which I've now had about 10 times. And this is how it goes. Person says to me, oh yeah, we're planning on migrating to Office 365. And because we're going to use ADFS, we don't need DirSync. Couple of people, yeah. Because I go, what? Huh? Because from my point of view, you know, these are two completely different things. One of these things is about provisioning, and one of them is about logon. They are different pieces, different components, complementary. One does not replace the other. And so I thought, you know, this is how I see it, but it's clearly not how other people see it. So I wanted to try and give an idea that identity is not one thing. There's no one box that does identity management, everything about identity in your organisation. It's something that operates in a lot of different components, and you need to start thinking about it that way and think about how those components are going to work together. So this is why I came up with this idea of expressing it like a jigsaw puzzle. Let's see how that goes. My metaphor of the day. So at the centre of my jigsaw puzzle, I have... You know, what is really the goal of all this stuff? Authentication and authorization. Who are you and what can you do? That's all this is about. Of course, we have to think about directories. And I'm using this in a very generic way here to mean anywhere that digital identities live. So this might be your classic directory. It might be a database. It might be something else. These can be specific to one application, or they can be corporate and shared between many applications. We have to think about logon. How are our users going to log on? Is a password enough? Do we need a multi-factor authentication? If there are passwords in there, how are we going to manage those? How are we going to deal with them? What if people forget their passwords? What if people forget their tokens? All these things have to be considered. Now, provisioning. I've used this again in a very generic way. Provisioning is usually used to mean creating something, as in creating a user account, or granting access, provisioning access, could just be putting someone in a group. I'm using it a bit more generally also to mean ongoing updates to those digital identities and also deprovisioning, very important. We mustn't ever forget that things need to be disabled when they're not supposed to be used anymore. Access control. Of course, that's a big topic. This is getting more nuanced, I feel. You know, we're starting to look more at context around access control. Okay, you can have access to this data, but you know, we want to control the way you use it and the way you share it. Mobility, of course, very important. Here I'm talking about both mobile devices and mobile users. And really, none of this stuff works with applications that aren't developed to you know, slot into the other components. So, the old school way of developing an application, it completely managed its own identities, its own user accounts. It completely controlled the way those accounts were created. It controlled the logon. The application did all of that. That's the old way. The new way, there should be a layer of separation in there. So an application should not be controlling the identity. It should be accepting identity information from identity providers. And if we need to swap out the provider, if we need to change the logon method, we should be able to do that. So none of this works unless the applications are also developed in these more modern identity-aware ways. Now, there's a reason I coloured this in grey, our grey areas. These are things that are important for every component. We should be thinking about audit, reporting, data quality, policies, governance. Unfortunately, these are things that are very often left to the end, left as an afterthought. And it's not really surprising why that is. You know, often we can't solve these problems just with technology. We're technologists, we like to solve things with technology. But these kind of problems often require a lot more forward and back with the business. We need them to make some proper decisions. You know, this is our policy for data access. This is our policy for account creation and management. And so, hard, but important. This is a nice picture, yeah? Nice picture, nice and neat, everything slotting in nicely together. Unfortunately, the history of identity management and identity connectivity between these components would probably have you drawing something a bit more like that. But yeah, that's yesterday. So let's look forward to the future now. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go through each of these pieces in turn and talk a little bit about some trends, and then we'll have a look at one or at most two Microsoft technologies that really express that trend. I can't cover everything. I initially tried in this talk, it was going to be about 4 days long. So let's get it down to 60 minutes. Now, a big trend is identity as a service. So you've all heard of software as a service and platform as a service. Identity as a service, well, probably the best way is to talk about why Windows Azure Active Directory is an identity as a service platform. Has anyone heard anything about Azure Active Directory this week? You know, anyone mentioning it? Yeah, of course. It's kind of the big deal at the moment. So, look, this will all be summary, but let's just have a quick look at it anyway. So, you know, your Windows Azure Active Directory is the directory that is used by the Microsoft SaaS applications. As well as that, just like your on-prem Active Directory can be used by third-party or in-house applications as its directory, so too can Azure be the directory for third-party applications or applications you write yourself. Okay? Now, the other thing that's really neat is this, and this is where it starts becoming identity as a service. This idea that you should have one managed identity in the cloud. We don't want to repeat those problems that we have on-prem, where all these different applications have their own siloed identity stores, and we've got this whole problem with managing them. We don't want that in the cloud. Let's do this properly. Now, many SaaS applications do still require their own directory, but we just want to manage the cloud identity in one place. That's the promise of identity as a service. And this front ending takes two forms. One is for the user, that they should actually get a single sign-on access to these other SaaS applications, and I'm talking about other vendors' applications, using their Azure account. The other one is, as an administrator, you should only need to manage that account in one place, manage its particulars, and also what other applications it gets. And I'll have a couple of screenshots in a bit showing how that can work. Now, of course, on-premise is not going away anytime soon, so we need, if we're working in a hybrid mode, we need a way to synchronize our on-premise identities with our cloud identities. So anyone here using DirSync? Yeah, I mean, DirSync has been around for a while now. It's the sort of, you know, preferred method to synchronize your on-prem Active Directory up to Azure. You know, it's fine. At doing that, it has some restrictions, which I'll talk about in a minute. On top of that, you can optionally layer ADFS. So it's a layering on top. It's not one or the other. It's an extra thing you can add on top. And the ADFS gives you single sign-on. So the DirSync finds your local accounts, provisions them in the cloud. The ADFS allows you to also log on using your on-prem credentials. Recent update to DirSync, it now supports synchronizing the password hash from your on-prem Active Directory up to the cloud. You would use this instead of ADFS. There's no reason to use ADFS and synchronize the password hash, because both of them are about the same. It's about the user having just the one password to remember. But in this case, it's the same sign-on, not a true single sign-on. The other thing, for multi-forest environments, DirSync only handles one on-prem Active Directory forest. There is now available on Connect, so it's not general availability yet, but anyone can download it for Connect. There is now an Azure Management Agent for Forefront Identity Manager, and it can handle multiple forests. So I just want to show you this. Has anyone seen this picture this week, the Azure application panel? No? Oh, a couple of people. That's good. I thought they'd be talking a lot about this. This is available now in preview. And what this is a panel that you can configure individually for your users to show them the applications, the SaaS applications that they have access to. And you can actually configure which applications they have access to in Azure. And you'll see there, we've got Box, we've got Google Apps, we've got Salesforce. This is not just Microsoft stuff. And so for the user, this is their one-stop shop to get access to all these applications. And they will have a single sign-on to those applications. Behind the scenes, there's one of two things happening. If the target application supports a federated logon, and you've set that up, then it is a true single sign-on using their Azure. They only need to log on to Azure, and they will be accepted in that target application. If you can't set that up for whatever reason, then it actually operates like a password saver. So if you're using LastPass, it's very like that. User has to enter their username and password once. That's encrypted. That's stored securely with the user's details in your tenant. They also need a browser plugin. And then when they click that icon, the browser plugin will, you know, decrypt and insert their credentials in there for them. So, you know, for the user, it's the same end result. Now, I might seem like I'm going through these quite quickly, but like I said, trying to cover a lot of ground here. So on to logon. Federated single sign-on is a big deal. And federated single sign-on, that just means that you can log on to this directory using your credentials from that directory. So every time you go to a website that says log on here with your Facebook account, that's an example of federated logon. In that case, the underlying protocol is OAuth, Open Authentication, which is only interested in that component, that authentication. SAML is the protocol that is used by Federation services. It has a much broader scope. We'll talk a bit more about ADFS coming up. But there is a definite trend I've been noticing to use Federation just for logon. So we have this SAML token that's capable of a greater payload, but all that's actually going in it is this person's authenticated. Multi-factor authentication using mobile phones. I'm sure many of you are already using your mobile phone as a second factor of authentication with your bank. You can enable it for Azure, and many other services have this available now. So this is a trend. You know, you can have a whole other discussion about whether it's a good idea or not, but it's certainly a very pragmatic approach people are taking to having that second factor of authentication without actually having to supply people with, you know, some extra bit of hardware that you own. And also this notion, another big trend, that you know, logon should be variable, it should be risk-aware, should be context-sensitive. We don't always have the same logon sequence just because it's the same person and the same application, because there are all sorts of other variables, the device you're on, your location, you know, even the time of day. So that's another big trend. So what I'm going to look at now is the web application proxy and Windows Azure Active Directory multi-factor authentication. But just before I go into that, I wanted to talk about ADFS because I'm going to be mentioning it quite a bit. So just to give me an idea, who's quite comfortable with how ADFS works, where it fits in, and that's good, excellent. But I think that's probably still only, you know, 10 to 20% of people in the room. So I'll just very quickly go through this to give you an idea. So look, the general idea about ADFS is that a user in one security domain, we'll say, can access an application or a service in another security domain using their own home credentials. And the whole thing operates at the web layer. It all works on browser redirects. So there's no client you need to install. It all uses standard HTTP methods and protocols. So here's how it works. The user browses the application. The application says, oh, you need a token. Can't let you in without the token. So the application then tells the browser to redirect to the Federation server on its side, on the side of the service provider. Now, this service provider needs to already know about where this user's coming from. So some configuration has already gone on here. We need to know. We need to have a trust already set up. So it knows where the user's ADFS server is. And again, there's a browser redirect. We go to the identity provider's Federation server. Here, this server is in charge of arranging the token. And the token may require the user to log on. If the user's not already logged on to that domain, then it will organize the logon. User will have to type a username and password. And it may also add some extra information to this claims token that's going to go back. And in this case, I think I've said yes. So the token says, yes, we validated this person's ID. And as well as that, they're a member of this group you wanted to know about. So that is then something, if the application supports it, can actually start being used for access control decisions within the application. So we still need to redirect again. Now we go back to the service provider's Federation server. This guy over here actually decrypts the token. He does this only as a way of validating that it really does come from the correct ADFS server. So he's just using the public key of the identity provider's server just as a way of saying, yes, I do actually believe that this token came from where it was supposed to. But otherwise, nothing else happens in terms of validating those claims. There is a definite issue of trust here. We trust the identity provider to send us correct claims. So he re-encrypts the token using his own certificate. That goes back to the browser. And finally, the browser can be redirected back to the application with the token that's correctly validated and encrypted, and we're all good. Now, it might seem like a lot of stuff happening here, but this happens in a matter of seconds. And the user will only notice if they're actually watching the address bar in their browser. At some point, they may be prompted to log in, but otherwise, it all happens in a matter of seconds. So that, in a nutshell, is what ADFS is about. And now I want to talk about the web application proxy, which is a new server role in 2012 R2. And the web application proxy, firstly, it replaces the ADFS proxy from earlier versions. So my previous picture, I just had ADFS server on one side, ADFS server on the other side. Actually, you wouldn't do it like that. You would have an ADFS proxy in your DMZ, and then you have your actual ADFS server inside. And this is one of the roles of the web app proxy. It needs an ADFS server to talk to internally. That must be a 2012 R2 ADFS server. This is now actually a role you can install on a domain controller. So that's a new thing. So as previous versions of ADFS proxies, it allows users to access these external applications using their internal credentials. So our SaaS applications, and also if we have a partner organisation and we've got a federation trust with that partner organisation, then the ADFS proxy is proxying those requests. But the big change here is this. It's application publishing. So this is actually what TMG, UAG and ISA server do. Publish internal applications to be accessed from the internet. And what's quite interesting is the types of authentication that the web app proxy actually supports. So previously, the ADFS proxy could only work with claims-aware applications, applications that accepted that Federation SAML token. The web app proxy has a much broader scope. So we can publish applications that support claims, or Kerberos, or OAuth, or even forms-based using NTLM and BASIC. There are some slight differences in the user experience. If it's a token-based authentication, so by that I mean claims, Kerberos, OAuth, there's some kind of token involved, It's actually a single sign-on. The user signs on. At the web app proxy, this is brokered via ADFS with the internal AD. And from then on, they get seamless access to those applications. If it's a forms-based logon, well, that application only understands someone directly logging into it. So that's then a pass-through mode. They're passed through to that application, they'll still have to enter their username and password. But that's pretty cool. And this is now a role that you can just add to a Windows server. Another point just there, that access is actually conditional per application. You configure different types of access for different types of applications. And I've got just a couple of screenshots here from the web app proxy when you actually configure an application to publish an application. And I just wanted to point out here on the first one, the primary, you just see we have different rules for extranet and intranet. So first there's that idea of we can have a different logon depending on where you're coming in from. And over on the other side, this is the multi-factor authentication. So multi-factor authentication is actually built into the web app proxy, or the capability for it is. And again, we have that control. So here we're just saying, are we going to insist on multi-factor authentication for intranet users or just extranet users? So that's pretty cool. And actually up the top, I didn't put a box around it there, but you'll see the top one there is users and groups. So you can actually specify that multi-factor is required just for specific groups. So quite a bit of control there. Just a summary, points about the web app proxy. So part of the remote access server role in 2012. And I just told you all that. So if you need to remind yourself later, there's a slide. OK, I also wanted to talk about the Windows Azure multi-factor authentication service. Has anyone seen this week? Has anyone else talked about it? Yeah? OK, not very many people have seen it, but anyway. Some of you might have heard about a year ago, Microsoft purchased a company called PhoneFactor. And they specialize in multi-factor authentication based on phones. And this is now what PhoneFactor has become. It's become the Windows Azure multi-factor authentication service. And just give you a quick idea how it works with a SaaS application that uses Azure as its directory. So, user tries to access SaaS application. Authentication request is routed to Azure. In Azure, we've configured this user, this application, we need multi-factor. So after verifying the username and password, the multi-factor authentication service contacts the user's phone. And here we have a choice. We can actually send a voice call. So they don't actually have to have a mobile phone or a smartphone, but we can also send a text message, we can also talk to a smartphone app. What I think is really interesting about this is that it's also available for on-prem. So again, this is in preview. You can go and you can sign up for the preview for this service. And there's a link where you can download a little server service. You can install on a server internally. And this is what it's for. User tries to access on-premise app. Now, we need to put the multi-factor authentication kind of in between then what the application's trying to do. But it supports already all of these different ways. So if this application is just trying to do an LDAP bind against Active Directory, that's fine. You just give it the multi-factor authentication service endpoint to bind against instead. And this will arrange the logon with AD. And then it contacts the multi-factor authentication service in the cloud. And that communicates with the user's phone. And so here, you're tapping into all the infrastructure that's there to make phone calls, to send text messages, and to do it on a global scale. And you can just tap into that as a service, which immediately brings this capability within the reach of all sorts of organizations that wouldn't have had access to that before. So I think that's really neat. The last point here is that if you actually install this multi-factor authentication server on the web app proxy, you then get some extra capability. And the big thing is you get that per application control. And you would have seen before, I don't know if you noticed, but it's going to come back again, those two screens I showed from the web app proxy. And it didn't really have a lot of options listed for multi-factor authentication. In fact, it just has certificate by default. This is in the 2012 R2 preview that you can download. But when you install this PhoneFactor service, then that appears as well as another option. So you've got that per application control, and you know you can do all the things about, okay, you know, if you're inside, it's okay, but if you're outside, and we don't know where you're coming from, then we need that extra proof that it's really you. Okay, so let's talk a bit about provisioning. So, you know, I work with FIM, so I'm, you know, I really think people should never be creating accounts by hand, you know, because that just leads to them always being created in slightly different ways. They're not identifiable afterwards, they're hard to join up, and quite often, you know, they get created, they don't get switched off again, because users shout when they don't have something, but they don't usually shout when they do have something they don't need anymore. But anyway, you know, FIM doesn't really change all that much, but the big trends in the last couple of years have really been cloud-focused. And you know, there's a whole lot of work I could talk to you about SCIM, which is this protocol for cloud-based you know, provisioning of user accounts through web APIs and all that sort of thing. But we won't go into that level of detail. I'll just say that, you know, there is a lot of stuff. It is very cloud-focused because the SaaS providers understand that really they can't just be giving you another identity store that you've got to manage by hand and that is just going to be another great big burden. They do actually get that, and they realise that we need automated ways to manage these accounts. And the other thing I find quite interesting is that identity sync is just as important as ever and moving into the cloud. So we're going to have a very quick look at Forefront Identity Manager. There's nothing new in it, but you know, I can't do a talk on identity management without including it. And then we're going to have a look at Azure Account Sync. So just in a nutshell, what is FIM? Just a quick question. Does everyone here know what FIM does and how it fits in? Are there people who don't, who really have no clue about FIM? Okay, well, you people have clearly not stood anywhere near me in the last week. But anyway, well, look, in a nutshell, at its core, it's an identity synchronization engine. And it connects out of the box to all the kind of, you know, likely things that a lot of people have in their organizations. And you can also write your own custom connectors, or you can use PowerShell, or there's any number of tricks you can use. And the idea is that we want a central point that knows and maintains connections between all the different versions of the same person's identity in different systems. You know, so my record in the HR system, my phone number in the phone system, my Active Directory account, my Lotus Notes account. Keep a connection between all of those, and then you can start setting rules. This is the precedent source for my email address in Active Directory, but the precedent source for my phone number is in the phone system. And we can get all that synchronized up, make sure the data is correct everywhere. Now, of course, this is, you know, a lot of people tend to focus on onboarding for these sorts of systems, but with FIM, it's about managing the whole life cycle of that digital identity, with offboarding being just as important. We need to make sure that's automated, those accounts are being disabled when they should be, or people are being removed out of groups they don't need anymore. With the 2010 version, they introduced the FIM service and portal, which is built on SharePoint and Windows Workflow Foundation. And it's very much around, you know, requests and approvals. So, you know, these sorts of workflows. So someone requests something and an approval gets fired off and someone gets notified. And once that's all done, then the sync service can take over and create the accounts or do the groups. So that's all I'm going to say about FIM itself. I just want to go back and have another look at this application panel from the point of view of some other cool stuff that's starting to go on behind the scenes. And, you know, Google Apps, for instance, it needs an account. So it's all very well to say, I can give you a single sign-on into your Google Apps, but if the account doesn't exist yet, there's nothing to sign on to. So how are we going to get that account created? Well, there is actually an account synchronization service sitting behind all of this. And you can configure it, so when you assign someone Google Apps, it will go, apparently within 10 minutes, and create that Google Apps account. And I just wanted to show you this, because that's all you need to set up. Your Google Apps domain and a username password with the rights to create that account in Google Apps. And I wish identity synchronization was always this easy. Or maybe I don't, I wouldn't have a job to do. Anyway, that's pretty cool. And this is, again, that identity as a service idea, that one managed identity, you should be able to say, in Azure, this person has Google Apps, and it'll happen. That's pretty neat. So, a little bit about access control. Trends. So this context-based authorization is very much like I was saying with logon, that we should be more aware of context, more aware of risk. just as big a trend in access control. Now, access governance, you know, is a very generic sort of general term, and it can mean lots of things. But really, you know, it's about businesses need to have more of a broad view of access and what that means across their organisation. It shouldn't just be person phones the help desk and asks for something and they get it. You know, and maybe we need to be validating these access permissions ongoing. Maybe we need to be adding more approvals. Maybe, you know, whatever. But it depends on the business. But governance, it needs to be more controlled than it often has been in many organisations. And what I wanted to show you now is just very quickly is Behold. It's a role-based access control system that Microsoft bought about a year and a half ago, and it's bundled with FIM 2010 R2. So if you buy, you know, FIM server licenses, you can go ahead and install this and use it. So the idea of a RBAC system is that we try and tie access permissions to people's roles. And roles can take a number of different forms, and people can have multiple roles. They may just be organisational. You're in this department, you have this particular job. Or it may be you're working on this particular project. You have some other role. Separation of duties is another thing, that some roles are incompatible. So your RBAC system should be able to say, no, actually, you can't have these two at the same time. There's a number of modules in Behold. I'm only going to be looking at one of them today, but just in summary, the model generator is actually quite a lot of work that goes into building one of these RBAC models. What roles are in your organisation? What permissions do they lead to? So the model generator can help you analyse what you've already got as a part of building that role model. Analytics is when you're already up and running with, you know, the roles and the permissions happening and you want to see what a change is going to do before you put it in. The attestation is the one I'm going to show you. There is a self-service component that can be plugged into the FIM portal so people can do things like request a particular role or even assign one of their roles to someone else for a period of time, so they're going away or something. And it's got its own reporting as well. But I wanted to have a look at the attestation module because I think that this is probably the one that most organisations will be able to get value out of, you know, most quickly. And it's this notion that you know, permissions do need to be reviewed. You shouldn't just give people, you know, you give people permission, you give them the keys, right, that's it, you've got it for life. No, maybe we need to start reviewing these on a periodic basis, but it's not really up to IT, is it? It should be up to the business to say whether these accesses are correct. So in the attestation module, we define campaigns. And they can be one-off or they can be recurring. We can do it either on, you know, can you just attest that person has account in this system? Or do we actually want to delve down into that system and look at the specific permissions they have? We need to have stewards defined. It's just a Behold term. This is the person who gets to say yes or no. They can have some relationship to the user, such as a manager. They could be an application owner. Or, in fact, we can upload a CSV file into the system with, you know, steward-to-user relationships. And there can be multiple stewards to one user. Our steward's decision can be overridden. And this last point here is that if it's all connected through with FIMSync, so we have Behold connecting to FIMSync, and then we have the target system also connected, we can actually set this up to go ahead and disable the account straight away, if that's the choice of the steward. So I just want to show you a couple of pictures here of what it looks like to set up a campaign. So here I'm just putting in a name, and I'm gonna attest the CRM system. Who's got access to the CRM system? I can set a start date, duration for the campaign. I can send out reminders. I need to set a scope for the campaign. These are my options here. Where it says organisational units there, it doesn't mean ADOUs. It actually means business units. So you might just want to target one particular area in the organisation. I'm going to go for applications. I've got a list of the applications that Behold currently knows about. Do I want to just attest they have an account, or do I want to delve into those permissions in the system or application? I'll just attest the accounts. And finally, how am I going to define the stewards? if I say that I want it to be user attribute based, then I have to nominate the attribute that shows the relationship. So, yeah, manager. Let's get the managers to do some work. And finally, I just select my CRM system there. There's a number of email templates in the system, and you can go ahead and modify them however you need for your environment, and you sort of use these variables so that the email will actually be addressed to the correct person and have the right information in it. So the stewards received an email, it's got a link in it, they click on the link and that brings them into the attestation portal. And first they're going to see a list of any campaigns that they have something to do in. This person only has one. He opens the campaign and he sees the people that he is expected to attest. First, he's got to say whether he is responsible or not responsible for that person, because we may have had out-of-date information about managers. And finally, he gets to say yes or no. And again, as I mentioned before, what happens next is really up to you. You could in fact run this in just a reporting mode if you wanted to. Or if the whole thing's connected through the FIMSync service and it's a deny, we go ahead and we cut them off. But that's up to the requirements of your project. So that's Behold. Let's talk about mobility. Now, I don't need to tell you guys that BYOD is a trend. Device identification, though, you know, that's something that people have been worrying about for years now. People are bringing in all these devices. You know, how are we going to tell which device they're using when we don't have any say over it, when we haven't given it to them in the first place? So has anyone seen Workplace Join this week? No. I think this is a really cool new feature of 2012 R2. So when you install your first 2012 R2 domain controller, it will extend the schema. And your schema will now have a device object class. And the purpose of this is for registering known devices. It's not a managed device, it's not a domain joined device, it's just a device we know about. As part of the registration process, a certificate is dropped on the device, and this actually then becomes a second factor of authentication. You do need the web application proxy, so the endpoint for this is published through the web application proxy, and here's a little schematic of that. So you see in the middle we've got our web app proxy, that's publishing the endpoint for the device join. Inside, on the internal ADFS, we need to install this device registration service. And that will then sort out creating that device object in Active Directory, and will also bring the certificate back to be dropped on the user's device. And all sorts of devices are supported. It's for mobile phones, it's for tablets, it's also for home computers. Okay? So very straightforward. And the interesting thing, again, about using the web app proxy, and I think, have I got a picture? Yep. Is we can start now adding extra levels and nuances to our authentication based on whether we already know about this device or not. So maybe we say to the user, if you register your device, you'll get single sign-on. But if you attach from an unregistered device, then we're going to need to, you know, send you a text message or ring your phone. Looking good? Yeah. Thinking about how you could use this? Oof. Sorry. It's all in there somewhere. Right, development. So the big trend, who's been hearing this term, RESTful APIs? Yeah, it's coming up a lot, isn't it? And as far as I can tell, that just means an API that's basically published as a web endpoint and you can communicate with it using standard web protocols. But that is definitely a big trend. You know, the idea that all applications should be able to talk to each other using these APIs. It's not just about people now going and entering data in forms. These applications need to be able to talk to each other. And for identity, this is the big way that we can automate those CRUD operations with cloud identity providers. The other trend I mentioned earlier, and that's that applications should really not be trying to control identity now. They should not be setting the way the user logs on. They should not be dictating how the provisioning works. Applications, as much as possible, should have a layer of abstraction and should be using identity providers. And that's all Windows Identity Foundation, which has been around for quite a few years now as part of .NET and really enables that whole way of developing applications. So we're going to have a quick look at the Graph API. Have people heard about Graph this week? Didn't be much talk about Graph? Not much? No, I'm surprised. Okay, so Graph API is the big RESTful API for Azure. And it's got a lot of connotations for identity, seeing as Azure is what? It's a big identity store. It's a standards-based web API for writing applications that work with Azure AD. So this is what people will be using when they write those third-party applications that can hook in and use Azure as their directory. The focus is very much on CRUD operations, create, update, and delete of objects, and on search. And the idea here with search, and this is why it's called Graph, like there's, you know, Facebook Graph, and I think there's a Google Graph, they're all using this term at the moment. It's all about following connections between objects, following those reference attributes. Because, you know, the whole LDAP style of you're just in a bucket of an OU, it hasn't really, you know, it's not really working anymore, is it? People have a lot of different connections between a lot of different things, and we need to be more flexible. Native support for OAuth and SAML, and it is designed from the ground up for query speed and accessibility. And I've seen some demos, very impressive with the speed. So look, I'm not going to go through this in detail, I just wanted to give you a taste that this is what a creating a user through Graph looks like. And the things I want to point out, first, it's an HTTP post, and we're going to a URL, we're going to an address. We have in the body there, that's the details about our user, their particulars, and down the bottom we're getting a 201 standard HTTP response. And this is the whole thrust of these RESTful APIs, that it should, you know, very much use these standard protocols and methods. And this is just a little picture of how a Graph query looks. Again, it looks like a URL, because it is. So the first bit we have, the Graph URL is always like that. The next bit, the green bit, is addressing the particular tenant we want to talk to. We then say with the blue bit there what kind of object we're interested in. Now the next bit in red, I actually think this is quite interesting. It's the API version. So they are releasing updates to Graph at an incredible rate. Like every few weeks, there are updates coming out to Graph. And all these API versions are actually available at the same time. So when you address the tenant, you specify which version of the API you want. So that's great. It means you can develop your application. It works with this version of the API. Meanwhile, they're going in there doing updates. But, you know, you've got time. You can keep talking to the version of the API that you're tested on. So I think that's really neat. And finally, at the end here in yellow, just an example of an OData filter. That's a very simple one. You know, send me all the users in Western Australia. But as well, we can do things. We can follow relationships, member of, manager, and we can also do a differential query. Give me all the changes since the last time I queried. That's all I'm going to show you about Graph. Now the last bit, my grey areas, my hard stuff. I'm not going to show you any technology here because there isn't any one solution. You know, a lot of us, we're still using tools like, quite frankly, Excel or System Center, SQL reporting services. But, you know, there's nothing new, there's nothing revolutionary. But what I will say, and I do find this comforting, is I do believe that you know, things like reporting and logging is increasingly becoming a first-class citizen. And they're not just saying that, they're actually doing it. I worked with an early adopter of BPOS, and yeah, the reporting was fairly non-existent, and logging, they were in shared tenancy, they couldn't even get logs. Now, when I'm going in and having a look at these services that are just in preview, there's reporting already there, there's logging already there. And this is very good. We need this stuff. One thing I do hope is that, you know, one of the reasons that these sorts of areas are so difficult is because there's not enough uniformity going on in all those components. So how do you do one reporting system that can report across all these disparate components that can't even talk to each other? So what I do hope is that as we have more standards, as we have more uniformity in our methodologies, then tools will improve in these sorts of areas, and methods will improve as well. So look, I want to do a little use case now to try and sort of bring it all together. See my time? Yep. Actually, I'm going through this really quickly. Sorry, am I talking at 100 miles an hour? I was so worried about not getting it all in and you all wanting to leave and go to the lock note. But anyway, maybe we'll have time for questions. So a bit of a use case, quite a common one. I have an application internally, but I need both internal and external users to access this. So I'm not telling you here the way to do it. I'm just going to build up a number of different scenarios. So first thing we have to think about is directory. So okay, our internal users are fine. We've got our corporate AD. External users, we might have a number of different choices. We might have accepted cloud identity providers, and by this, you know, I could mean Facebook. A trusted federated partner, or we might actually, as a lot of people do, build a domain in your DMZ, and that's where the external users go. The application as well may also have its own ID store. That's still a type of directory. We still need to consider it. Provisioning. So perhaps we have FIM internally, which is doing all our AD provisioning for us. It's very nice if you have it. And for our externals, well, we probably need some kind of self-registration portal. Log on. So for extranet, so both internal and internal external people coming from outside, we could put the web app proxy in and ADFS. We have to have ADFS with the web app proxy. And that will broker their log on, give them that single point of accessing the application. Again, for externals, either we are lucky enough to have a trusted identity provider, or we have accepted the risks with a public identity provider, not that they're really public because they're really private companies. Alternatively, if we're going to manage all this ourselves and do that externals domain, then we've got some extra things we need to think about. We're the identity provider. We've got to think about their password reset. We're in charge of making sure they can log on. And that may be quite a bit of extra work. Oh, and here I've just added the FIM self-service password reset in there. There are other things that can do self-service password reset, but that's one that I know because that's part of FIM. Access control. So these are two different options here. Is the access control completely managed in the application, in that if you want to change the access control, you've got to go into some, you know, utility provided by the application itself and make changes there? Or is this a modern claims-based application which will just accept claims from an identity provider about the users, and all the application needs to worry about is how to respond to those claims? If you are going claims-based, then this application does need to be developed using the Windows Identity Foundation .NET libraries. And finally, I've got mobility in there. And of course, that's our web application proxy and potentially our device join as well, our workplace join. So there's quite a lot of bits on that picture. You know, there's quite a lot of different components there. And, you know, like I said at the beginning, identity is not one thing. It's not one box. It's not one service. It is, in fact, a layer that runs through a whole lot of different components. Pretty much anything that's to do with service delivery, getting users to access servers, has an identity layer. And the big problem that we've always had is getting those identity layers to talk to each other. And this really brings me to my core trend. And that is that progressively, by following standards, both in the technology we choose, but also in the practices, best practices for managing identity data, best practices for access governance, over time, we can bring ourselves to a point where these identity components do start to fit together like the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. And that's my hope. And that's what I work towards. So I really rushed through that. I was so worried I was going to go over time. I can't believe it. Look, I did want to list these. like I said, I only touched very briefly on a lot of different things here. But I really enjoyed watching these sessions on Channel 9. And I suggest if you're interested in learning more about some of these different technologies to go and watch those. And otherwise, well, got plenty of time for questions. Anyone got a question? Yes. Have I used FIM Identity Sync instead of DIRSync? Well, you see, the thing is, so firstly, DIRSync is FIM. It actually is FIM Sync, but it's kind of, you know, you're not supposed to mess with it.
I'm just thinking, so you have more control around the process and potentially loading your identity into multiple Azure AD tenants.
Yeah, look, and so like I mentioned, there is now a management agent for FIM, but it's only available on Connect. It's been around for quite a while, but you know, only the sort of big PSS customers had it. And the thing about it, though, is that what they're saying is that it's still supposed to be a dedicated FIM server. So it's for multi-forest. It's for FIM server, out to Azure, one Azure, multiple forests internally. So that's what it's designed for. I mean, the fact of the matter is you could take it and use it for other things. It just wouldn't be supported. There are lots of other neat third-party tools that can replace DIRSync. I mean, myself, you know, I've used DIRSync and I actually think it's okay once you get your head around the fact that it's a vacuum cleaner and it takes every single user group and contact it finds in your Active Directory and it shunts them up to the cloud whether you want them there or not. Service accounts, contractor accounts, the lot, you know. And actually, the way I managed that in a very complex site was to use FIM to populate a dedicated DIRSync domain. And then just, and that was nice and clean and tidy and only had the people that we actually wanted in the cloud. But there are some really neat things that people are doing as well with virtual directory. Does everyone know about virtual directories? Yeah? You do now, yeah. I wanted to include virtual directories here because they're actually really super neat. It's this this idea that you know, I was talking to someone the other day and they were like, oh, and then we threw up another Active Directory to do this, and then we threw up another Active Directory to do that, and then we threw up an Atom instance, and then just end up with just this proliferation of ADs and Atoms. And what the virtual directory does is it pretends to be a new AD or an Atom or, you know, a database or an LDAP, an iPlanet, all sorts of things that they can pretend to be. So the application's happy. You can effectively make virtual views on your Active Directory. Keep the applications happy. Application needs some old version of, you know, whatever you can't get your hands on. You don't want to support it anymore. Let the virtual directory pretend to be that directory. Meanwhile, the data is actually coming from AD. So, anyway, there's lots of neat things out there happening in identity. But, you know, really, we've got to be thinking about the quality of the data. We've got to be thinking about managing it properly, automating it so things are set up the same every time, so things are trackable. You know, they use this term breadcrumbing. Every time you create a user account, there should be something on that that's unique and that is trackable back, joinable back, so you can know, yeah, that person left, not another person with the same name. Anyway, any other questions? Or do we all want an early mark? Yeah. What's FIM's next name going to be? Yeah, you might have noticed my Twitter handle is Miss M-I-I-S, which was its name in 2003. In 2007, it was called ILM. In 2010, they called it FIM. A lot of us have been betting on SCIM because we thought it probably should have been in System Center and not Forefront. I think at the moment, they've kind of moved it into the Azure group, which is weird. So is it going to be ASIM? I don't know. I'll find out when you do. Okay, anything else? I've got some cards down here if anyone wants one. And otherwise, thanks for coming along. Sorry I rushed through that so quickly. I was so worried about going over.